I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show, and it's blue skies over West London because just a few miles away, Watford recording an important victory. I forget against who. Huge win for Claudio Ranieri.
Who's the manager again?
It's crazy. Claudio Ranieri, one of three managers in the Premier League who've already won the Premier League title in their careers. Very impressive. We'll be getting into Watford's resounding victory. And of course, I'm kidding. I'm not trolling anybody. Obviously, we'll be talking Solskjaer. That will be our first segment. And then we're going to get into plenty else, because plenty else happened. Yeah. Huge games in Serie A, Inter and Napoli, Milan losing as well, Xavi making his debut for Barcelona, Real Madrid looking impressive.
Lyon Marseille being abandoned again.
You had to go there, bringing up the bad news.
Yeah.
But let's start at the top, because obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is no longer the Manchester United manager, relieved of duty on Sunday morning, via statement. Mark, I don't think for people who care about Manchester United, for people who care about competent people being given big jobs and showing that they belong, I don't think anybody can be sad that he's gone. Or they made the right, for the good of the club, they made the right decision, right?
Oh, absolutely, they made the right decision. Maybe at least 4 weeks too late, but you know, maybe 2.5 years too late. I don't think Ollie was.
But right now, they made the right decision, right? And you're not going to dispute that. So we got out of the way. I just want to make
sure we all agree.
We're not going to have a debate that they should have given Ollie more time because Fergie got 5 years. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. So,
less time for sure.
Mark, I just want to understand what's going to happen next is. Michael Carrick has been appointed as a caretaker manager. He will be in the dugout when they play Villarreal on Tuesday night in the Champions League, which is a pretty big game given the way that group is shaping up. And then they're going to appoint an interim manager until the end of the season. And then they're going to go for the guy they really want. Now, the logic behind this is that the really, really big names are not available right now, or it would be too difficult even if you show up with £100 million and try to get Pep Guardiola from City or Nagelsmann for Bayern, you know, even these fanciful things, not going to happen. So therefore, just have somebody, safe pair of hands, see out the season, qualify for the Champions League if you can, and then get the guy you want. Give yourself time to get the guy you want. You guys, we're talking off air, you guys seem to think this is a bad idea. Why? It's just your own negativity.
Well, that process you just described is exactly what happened last time when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came in, that they would keep an interim guy in charge until the end of the season to get a proper manager, which didn't actually turn out to be what happened. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Carrick, you know, ends up being the interim manager until the end of the season, because if he gets a couple of decent results, it'll suddenly kind of take the heat out of trying to find an interim manager, because who's going to want to take the job for 6 months at Man United knowing that you're not going to get the job? It's just a stupid scenario. Cool. Just find an interim manager. They had 4 weeks to do it after the Liverpool defeat. They can't find an interim. So it tells you that the club doesn't know what to do or where to turn.
Okay, well,
so it's not an ideal
scenario.
Mark,
if I jump in there. So if Carrick comes in and does well enough through the end of the season, I mean, when you mentioned the Solskjaer analogy, Jules, what went wrong was they all got so excited about Paris, which we're going to get into this later, because I think it's absolutely grotesque to think of that as a high point. They ended up giving Solskjaer the job and then extending his contract and $7.5 million and whatever else. Mm. Just stick with the plan. If Carrick does well and Carrick can carry on till the end of the season, that's fine. But don't lose sight of who you are. Don't lose sight of the fact that while Michael Carrick is a wonderful guy, may one day be a great manager, you've tried this thing. Now go and do something different. Go and get the guy you want, right?
That's a big issue with the whole caretaker interim thing. This is Manchester United we're talking about. This is one of the biggest clubs in the world. You can do caretaker, but then you should go and get whoever you want. You're that big.
How are you going to do that during the season?
But it doesn't matter. Okay, what if in the summer you don't get the guys you want? What, you keep your caretaker interim manager for a bit longer and say to him, you know what, we keep you until Christmas, and maybe at Christmas we can get the guy we want.
Come on, man. That reminds me of those people.
Tell me what happens if they don't get the guys they want in the summer.
Then they go to their second choice, or they go to their third choice. They're still going to be better than Michael Carrick long term.
But they can get surely one first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice now. Why would you have to wait for the summer?
I don't think you can get a first choice now, because if somebody's a first choice top drawer manager, they're most likely employed right now.
But if Pochettino wants to come, he wants to come now. Why would he wait the summer?
Okay, so that brings us that you brought up Pochettino. it's being reported in every outlet, and I'm going to give away a trade secret now that when every single outlet has a story with unnamed sources, it's the same person, possibly somebody working for Pochettino, picking up the phone and saying, like, yeah, Poch would be happy to come. I don't understand this because Pochettino is managing Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe right now, and he has a legitimate shot at winning the Champions League, more so than he would have at United. But hey, I'm not Pochettino. Mark, what do we think of this? Is this something they should be taking seriously?
Yeah, well, listen, I agree that Man United are supposedly the biggest club in the world. They self-styled biggest club in the world, so prove it. Maurizio Pochettino will require a compensation package in the summer, as he does now. Nothing will change in the summer. Yes, there'll be no games and there'll be no competitive action, but they'll still have to pay for him next summer as they do now. So,
you know, I'm not even sure that's true, actually, what you're saying. I'm sorry, Jules, maybe you know more about this. But with these compensation packages, and the compensation that happens is you still have to negotiate with the club. And if I'm Paris Saint-Germain, losing my manager in mid-season is going to be a darn sight more expensive than at the end of the summer. So let's just say, oh, it's the same.
But
it's not the same.
No,
but well, it's still a fee to pay.
Yeah.
Which is right, why you do it now on the summer.
So I'm sorry.
It's going to be free next summer.
I'm sorry, but you're talking about going to one of the richest, biggest spending clubs in the world, right? And negotiating with them in mid-season when they have no incentive, they can make you pay through the nose. You have a public negotiation for Pochettino, and you know that it would be extremely public because it's already been made public by Pochettino's people. This to me seems like not a great idea, but hey, maybe I'm in the minority here.
This is a really good conversation debate. Aston Villa.
Thank you.
Aston Villa wanted a manager that was already in the job, yeah? They could have said, okay, we're going to have... John, what's the random name that you say in English, like for like a random English
Joe name? Bloggs.
Yeah. We're going to have Joe Bloggs as an interim coach now until the end of the season. And then in the end of the season, we're going to get Steven Gerrard from Rangers.
Right? It could have, yeah.
That's what you were saying about Poch. But Gerrard... No, but that's what you said. You said that's what United should do. Joe Bloggs until the end of the season and then get the manager that we want, like Pochettino.
Because Rangers, so basically, I think because most people would agree that Steven Gerrard is a really, really good solution for Aston Villa.
Yeah.
That Aston Villa are a far wealthier club than Rangers right now. I'm not saying, sorry, Rangers, I'm not saying they're bigger, they get bigger crowds, but they're a richer club right now with wealthier owners, and they have to avoid relegation.
Okay.
So there was an absolute imperative there for them to go and get the best possible guy that they could get
Stop there. Manchester United are a bigger club than PSG in terms of in terms of revenue. I'm not saying that the owners are healthier, wealthier or not, but they have more revenue. They have more money than PSG.
Yes.
They're in a situation where they can miss out on top four, so they need the right manager to help them reach top four.
Mm-hmm.
So similar that Aston Villa avoid relegation, Aston Villa are richer than Rangers. Rangers are the manager who wanted to leave to go to Aston Villa because he also felt that he was the right fit for Aston Villa. PSG have a manager in Marcel Pochettino who feels he's the right fit for United and who wants to go to United. So what's the difference between Aston Villa going to get Steven Gerrard to Rangers and pay £3 million and United going and get Marcel Pochettino from PSG and pay £30 million? There's no difference. This is what clubs do when they change manager halfway through the season.
Okay, so... I'll answer that question, which I think is relevant. So, yes, United do have a higher revenue than Paris Saint-Germain, but the difference in resources between United and Paris Saint-Germain is nowhere near the difference of resources between Villa and Rangers.
But that's why you pay 30 instead of 3.
That's fine.
Yeah. But so, other than that, it's exactly the same process.
No, because Paris Saint-Germain just signed Lionel Messi. There's a question of price. They can hold... Paris Saint-Germain could ask you, like, all right, pay us $1 billion then. Glazers, you know, send us Avram here to work in the kitchen
PhD
for a year.
Have a manager who can go and see them and say, you know what, I want to leave this club to go to United.
It's fine. That's
so
fine.
You don't ask for $1 billion when your manager wants to go.
Let's wait for him.
No. I'm just saying to you.
Let's see if he actually does
that. It's the same.
Secondly,
the same process.
Villa not finishing top four. Villa getting relegated would be far more disastrous to them.
You know why? Now you're playing on words.
No, I'm right.
It's exactly the same process, Gav. Exactly the same way.
I see the situation differently. But let's talk about Pochettino specifically. Mark, I'm a Poch head. I'm a big Pochettino fan. I know that the wheels came off at the end at Spurs. I don't think it was necessarily his fault, but I look at what he achieved before with limited resources, coaching, playing great football, and whatever else. How does he project at United? And B, did they ever seriously look at him before?
Yeah, I mean, when Mourinho was sacked in 2018, he was the guy they wanted. And, the plan was to push to get Pochettino at the time, but... The Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thing happened, and they allow themselves to fall into that trap. But United have pursued him a long time. Ed Woodward, who, and this is another problem, by the way, Ed Woodward is the outgoing chief executive, might be gone before they actually appoint a manager. So, you know, we've got a situation there whereby the new chief exec might want somebody else. But United have had a long-term desire to get Pochettino. They like the fact that he, you know, gives young players a chance. He's a coach that makes players better. He works within a modern football system of director of football, technical director, etc. So he ticks all the boxes. But it depends on having the audacity, ambition, whatever you want to call it, the boldness to go to PSG and offer to pay for their manager. And I you both have valid points on this, in the sense that, yes, Man United can go and get it, but equally PSG don't need to sell, and they're a big, strong, powerful club. But, you know, it's the Premier League. The Premier League has a big sway over certainly over Ligue 1. We don't know whether Poch has got some sort of release clause in his contract which allows him to speak to an English club. You know, his family's still back in London. So maybe there's something there. We don't know. But, yes, he ticks all the boxes for United, but this will ultimately fall down, I believe, on the fact that United don't have a credible structure in place of people to get the deal done. We talk about Aston Villa and Gerrard. You know, they've got people like Christian Perslow, who's worked in the game before.
Oh, the Fernando Torres of football finance, that guy?
Yeah, but still, he's got experience of working in the game.
Right.
The United guys
haven't.
Ed
Woodward's been in the job for 8 years. I mean,
but they just make mistake after mistake. The thing about Ed Woodward is he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and that is the problem, in the sense that he thinks he has all the answers, and he doesn't.
You make a good point about the structure, and I think this is one thing that, you know, when people review Solskjaer, and we'll get to Solskjaer in a second, you know, it's not just him, it's the players. There was that very poignant scene at the end when Solskjaer goes over to thank the fans. He gets some boos, and Bruno Fernandes flips out and says, "No, no, point at us, boo us, yeah, boo us." I thought that was a bit fugazi myself.
Yeah, of course.
But whatever. I mean, it could have been that game, based on the way he played in that game, Fernandes could have just been pointing at himself the whole time. But this is what I don't understand, and you touched upon it there, right? Remember all those stories? There's going to be an emergency board meeting. You and I were texting, Mark, and we said, I think you said, like, yeah, the board meeting is basically Ed getting on the phone with Joe Glazer. Well, with just one Glazer.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is Avram going to do, right? So right now you have a situation where you have Joe Glazer, who, let's face it, nobody likes, and you have Ed Woodward, who's leaving and his track record isn't tremendous.
But you also have Matt Judge, who is clearly
the contracts guy.
Yeah, not very good chief negotiator. Arnold. I mean, I'm not even sure what Arnold really does, but clearly is inefficient.
But this is what I wonder about the decision-making process. So in a normal club, in a normal situation, rather than linking Darren Fletcher to the job, which I thought was, well, I thought it was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. I hope that was never seriously, not because Darren Fletcher's a bad guy, even though he has no coaching experience. You're grooming him to be your director of football, right? You're grooming him for this technical role. Why lump him in with these other things?
I saw him on the pitch before the derby. He was there, like a warm up with all the players and stuff. He looked like he was part of the technical staff more than anything.
Okay, so do you have any insight? Who will be making the decision? Because I think Fletcher, if you're going to put him in that role, Fletcher should be a big part of the decision-making, because in a normal structure, that is who does it, right?
John Murtough as well.
And your buddy John Murtough as well, I guess. But those people should be talking, and frankly, maybe Ed Woodward should be consulted, but also he's not going to be there to pick up the pieces because he's leaving.
Yeah.
Is that how it's going to work?
It's a shambles.
It is a very, very small power base at Man United. Ed Woodward has been the gatekeeper to the Glazers forever, basically, and when he goes, it'll be Richard Arnold, who is, you know, as close to Ed Woodward as Ed Woodward is to the Glazers. That they've got a very tight relationship, as we've discussed in the past, Gab, that their association predates Man United, the banking industry, and goes back to the University of Bristol, so they're very close. Yeah. But that is it. It's a very, very small decision-making team. It'll be Joe Glazer advised by Ed Woodward or Richard Arnold, and that'll be it. Now,
so Fletcher's not going to be involved in the decision?
What
is the point of having these people around?
But the thing is, Gab, this Darren Fletcher's first job in football. He's been doing it for 6 months. Now, let's be honest, Darren Fletcher may have an opinion, but it's wrong of the club to appoint somebody in that role in his first job. It's such a big decision to make at such a big club. I fear that John Merton and Darren Fletcher will be asked to go out and identify people, but they'll ultimately be ignored because all Man United do is go for the biggest name, the most eye-catching commercial sign they can make, and all the work that goes on behind the scenes is kind of thrown into the bin because they're not a big enough name. If John Merton and Darren Fletcher suggest Graham Potter for the Man United job, do you think they're going to get the job, or will they go for Pochettino or Zidane because of the bigger names? That's the danger.
Well, it's interesting with the big name thing, though, to be fair to this. You say that, Mark, but being Mr. Contrarian, Jules, I would point out Solskjaer, not a big name. Louis van Gaal at the time, frankly, because remember they appointed him, you know, it's not like all of a sudden you're getting, God, you know, Mourinho obviously was bling, and a big name. Moyes definitely not.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't want to sit here and stick up for Ed Woodward, but I don't know that that's necessarily fair that they always just go for the biggest name.
Well, Gab, let me just go back on those, right? So Solskjaer was basically a publicity stunt, is probably too much, but it was a move to appease the fans and just to buy themselves some time. Ollie used to play for the club, great, everyone loves Ollie, bring Ollie in. Mourinho was a reactive move because Pep Guardiola had taken a job at City and they needed somebody to match that, so they went for Mourinho. You know, two jobs too late, basically. Louis van Gaal had been out of football for four years. That was a stupid move because they tried to get Klopp, promised him the Disneyland of football, he rejected it. They missed out on Simeone. So they make bad appointments. They haven't made a good appointment since Fergie in 1986, and that was a different
even
board.
Even that,
David Moyes was seventh choice, the wrong choice.
Even that, at the beginning, looked not like the right call.
No, I was just pointing out, they don't necessarily go for the big names. Maybe we might, if it's not Pochettino, it could be somebody less field. Jules, what do you think of Poch as a solution? Would he do better with this group of players? Well, than Solskjaer, probably. But
I've been seeing him now in Paris for almost a year, let's say. There's still part of me who wonders if he can be a super big club guy. Because I suppose it worked in a very special environment at the time where there was no pressure, certainly, you know, apart from trying to finish top four, but not more than that, to going to... In a dressing room where there was no egos, where everybody was basically listening to every single word, to the comma that he was saying. In Paris, he's finding it very difficult because it's such the opposite extreme to what he had at Spurs. And I think that going to United in the mess that it is currently would be far more similar to what he has as PSG now than what he used to have at Spurs 5 years ago. And I just don't know how well can he respond to that. Okay, maybe being back to England, you know, feeling that everybody really wants him there, trust him, not having a sporting director like Leonardo, where it's not always the best of relationship, and maybe won't find it difficult with the United dressing room. But it could also be very similar to what he has in Paris, where he struggles to put his ideas in place. He struggles with the winning mentality of you have to win everything because you are Manchester United. Fifth place or sixth place is not enough, like he was maybe at a time at Spurs. You have to go and win things if you are United and they pay compensation for you and you've got a wage bill of 400 million euros and you have the history and legacy of the club. So I still have a few question marks, but I think he's a great guy, great coach. He will certainly take this club in the right direction, but how many years will it take him to build what he wants to build at United? I just don't think you have time at PSG or at United like you have time at Spurs.
No, maybe not like Spurs, but I mean, Solskjaer got 3 years, so without ever really looking good.
But Solskjaer got 3 years because of his past as a player there, which Poch doesn't have.
Well, maybe Poch will if they do have to pay 30 million. That's reason enough. Augie, there's a familiar thing we've all seen. We've all been in this job for a long time. Manager departs, gets sacked, whatever. Clubs start filtering out information about why the decision was inevitable on the one hand, while also going out of their way to thank him and say we're still great friends. Now, we're going to get to the Solskjaer exit interview, if that's what you want to call it, in a minute. But first, unsurprisingly, this morning, our website, Rob Dawson, had a very good piece like that with information coming from the clubs explaining why it had to go. Anything you read in there that surprised you? What do you think was most significant about where Solskjaer went wrong?
The reality is that it's almost been a sense of apologetically we were bounced into this because they didn't want to sack him. So there's not been an array of reasons for letting him go. They really didn't want to sack him. They were desperate for him to turn it around after the Liverpool game. So hoping against hope that he could do it. So there hasn't been the usual character assassination, you know, that you usually get upon people saying that, oh, he did this, the place hated this, the place hated that. There hasn't been any of that, really. It's been more a case of ridiculously what a good guy he was and what a nice guy he was. This has been a strange sacking in that sense, because, you know, from the players' camps and people like that, that's where you get the kind of the reality of it. But from the club's perspective, it's not been a, like I say, a taking down of the manager. It's been bizarre, actually. The whole softness and the kind of the maudling approach to it all, that, you know, Ollie's a great guy and all that. It's so sad it didn't work for him. That's been the tone. Not a sense of, you know, he made the players train too hard and they didn't like him. It's been very odd, really odd.
But they also, the players didn't like the fact that he was hardly taking training and let him Carrick and McKenna taking training.
But Cluffy never took training. Yeah, right? Like, there's an old tradition in England of the manager not taking training sessions, which is kind of passé. So
I think there was a lot as well from the players within the dressing room.
Yeah.
And you and I know some of the players who were not happy with the lack of leadership. And I know I always go back to this, but I just find it incredible that during the matches, he used to go and sit next to Carrick and say, okay, why are we doing that? And you could see them on your screen or in the stadium, when we were in the stadium, or on TV, him talking to Carrick, then going to Phelan, okay, what do we do now? Going to McKenna, okay, what do we do now? Because there was no leadership. He was not leading by example, as in terms of leadership. And it's the same at training tactically. I mean, it was abysmal, and I think the players very quickly realized that. But if you're the club, and just to go back quickly, if you're the club, okay, and you're Ed Woodward and you're watching training and Solskjaer is not there, not taking training, surely you think, like, this is not how a Manchester United manager, and I'm not talking the old school guy like Fergie and Cloughy and Busby and all of that. I'm taking now you have to be on the football pitch with your players, because then it shows that you've got no identity to feed them. You don't implement anything at training, and then you end up with David De Gea saying after the Watford defeat, we don't know what to do with the ball. The guy's been there 3 years, and the players still tell you there's no plan, no patterns of play, no idea, no identity, and De Gea says in front of the whole country, the whole world, we don't know what to do with the ball. I mean, come on.
Well, let me do the big name drop here, because when you mentioned people not taking training, Sir Alex told me, Sir Alex told me, not you guys, he told me personally that at the end of his career, he stopped. He took training a lot less frequently than he did at the beginning. He was micromanaging. But that was when, by that point, he'd had the same, well, his assistants did change over the year, but he had the same people there who were doing exactly what he wanted. And it was a choice he made, because by stepping back, he could pick up on things. But he was very, very much engaged. I wonder if Solskjaer just noted the end of Fergie when he started doing that, rather than the first part when he was out there micromanaging.
Maybe, because it's still not a good reason.
I think one of the most damning things at the weekend was the fact that I was told that Ollie was given the opportunity by the club to bring in anybody he wanted, any coach he wanted, anything to improve the backroom staff, and he turned it down because he said that his coaching team was already world class, and that's what he actually told.
But,
so,
well, sorry, when he says these things, does he believe that?
No, I mean, surely
not. Because I'm sorry, this is a good transition into his interview, right?
No, of course.
I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, like, okay, you're a nice guy. You're Norwegian. You're not one of those opinionated Norwegians like our boy Fjortoft.
Yeah.
You're clearly one of those overly polite, almost a Canadian Norwegian.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and you never
Canadian
say anything
Norwegians.
Negative.
Norwegians.
You know
sorry
what I mean,
to Canadians
right?
And Norwegians.
I say it in a nice way,
still,
right?
Sorry, guys.
You're very polite. And you want to talk about how much you love the club and how much of okay, this is fine.
All the friends he made and remade and reconnected with and connected with, right, and the one in the future he would make.
But surely he realized this. Surely he's played enough football to know that, oh, look, my team's playing really, really badly, right? Even when we win, we're playing badly. Even when we win, it's because that guy, Cristiano Ronaldo, who bumped up our wage bill by 25%, 23% when we signed him, is saving us the same way Bruno Fernandes saved us last season.
Yeah.
He must have seen these things. And I'm just wondering, maybe the exit interview wasn't the venue to do it. Do you think he'll ever give an explanation for what went wrong, or do you think that was it? That was him saying, like, I felt, you know, we felt it was the right time for me to step aside.
He
for the
said
good
he
the
tried
club.
Everything. He gave everything. So clearly, that was not enough.
So that's him saying. Is that him saying, Mark, I'm not good enough. I'm going to step aside because
clearly,
I love this club.
Clearly,
I don't think. I think a lot of football people, as you know, are often in denial as to what's happening in front of them. And I think that, you know, there's still certain ex-Man United managers complaining about not been given enough time 6, 7, 8 years ago. So some managers will never accept what their faults were. And I think Solskjaer's the same. He keeps banging on about the same things about we tried really hard, we worked really hard. They don't allow themselves to be strong enough to say, I need this or I need that. And of course you need better coaches. If you're not a coach on the training field and you're a so-called manager, you need a really top-class, reliable coach, like Fergie had with Kieros, with McLaren, with Mullenstein. Solskjaer wasn't strong enough to do that. And if you look at his coaching staff that he's described as world-class, the majority of them worked with him at Cardiff, who were relegated, worked with him at Molde, who, let's be honest, the Norwegian league is not comparable to the Premier League. They had a coaching staff under Solskjaer that was championship level at best. You know, let's give Michael Carrick and Kieran McKenna a bit of respect, because who knows what they may become. But they're in their first, Carrick's in his first job, McKenna's in his first senior job. They've employed rookies or people that have just got failure on their CV. There's nobody in that coaching staff that Solskjaer brought in with any sense of top level elite quality. And the players ultimately got fed up with it, because they're elite players, World Cup winners, Champions League winners. They're being coached by guys that got Cardiff relegated.
I want to move it on to something else, which is more, I think, the general environment around the club and around English football. Something happened on Saturday night, which I found shocking, even after many years in you know, living and working in this country, just simply because it's not something you would see in Italy, in France, we said. You certainly wouldn't see it in Glasgow, which is Harry Maguire gets himself sent off foolishly. He knows that his manager is probably going to get sacked.
Yeah.
And he goes out to dinner to celebrate his dad's birthday. Now, obviously, Harry Maguire has a right. Let's be very clear. I'm not criticizing this, right? Mm-hmm. But he goes out in a restaurant that then's like, oh, look, the Maguires are here. Let's put this on our Instagram page, right? Publicizes it.
Yeah.
His own sister goes and publicizes it. It's not a good look. And it's weird to me that nobody would have, that the Maguire wouldn't have figured out on his own. And I'm wondering, does this mean that the environment around the club is such, like, I would assume they've got...
Are you surprised? Are you surprised? Considering he's your club captain who comes out after the Liverpool defeat saying, oh, I'm here because I'm forced to.
What?
Sorry?
Yeah.
It's not my job to analyse the game. Sorry?
But the guy
who did that stupid celebration scoring for England against...
Yeah.
Albania. I was going to be mean to Albanian players. Sorry. So that's what. And after playing bad for like I don't know how many weeks.
The guy who went on holiday and ended up in prison, against, right?
So yeah, are you really surprised?
No. But this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the atmosphere around it. Because if I have somebody like that, right, who either because he's unaware or whatever makes the kind of decision that makes for very very poor optics, right? We don't see Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi out partying the cumbia after they've been humiliated and after his manager is about to get sacked and he got sent off, right? I don't believe I've ever seen that, right? And it's not just him. I don't think I've seen Frank Lampard do it. I don't think I've seen Steven Gerrard do it, right? Shouldn't there be somebody at the club who, after this game, after this humiliation, says, lads, tonight, please, low profile,
lack of
right?
Leadership again.
And I'm not saying Maguire can't celebrate with his dad. Of course, get a private room, make an arrangement with the restaurant. Guys, they're going in the back door, just their family. Please, no social media, whatever. Somebody should be doing this. And does this speak to something larger about the club? That leaving aside the football side, the PR side, is managed completely ass backwards as well.
Well, maybe they should have the social media monitoring team maybe tell them, obviously, because they'll know.
Yeah, where's your friend Phil Lynch and Brown? Where's Lynchy?
They've got a bespoke team that tells all these players what the social media things are doing. So, you know, maybe the emphasis is on the wrong part. But it needs common sense, and Jules is right. Some of the things that Maguire has done in the last month or so have been very odd. It lacks kind of, you know, expertise and lacks kind of common sense. You're right. I don't think you can complain about the guy going out for his father's birthday, but yeah. Tone it down, avoid public glare. Don't have pictures taken of people and say, look, I'm sorry, I can't do it today because I've had a really bad result. It doesn't look good. Just say that.
Yeah. I'll send you a signed shirt a week later. It's not, but again, if Maguire's so focused on football rather than PR that he doesn't get it, I am shocked that the club doesn't have somebody telling PR, telling Maguire, Harry, you represent the club. This is what you're going to do. He's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. Fine, sure, I'll do it. He's not a bad guy, right? All right, final point on this, because Augie, you and I were texting about this yesterday. And I think, obviously, United are a massive club. It's a very big club, blah, blah, blah. They keep telling they're the biggest club in the world. What I think is interesting is they're one of those big clubs, a little bit like Milan as well, who've really only had two periods of sustained success in their history. Now, those two periods were very long periods because they coincided with Matt Busby and Sir Alex Ferguson. But United have won 20 English titles. 18 of them were won by either Busby or Fergie. Every single European trophy they've won was won by either Busby or Fergie. The vast bulk of their FA Cup, they won some in the early 80s, but in general, I think it's more than half were won by Busby or Fergie. The two of them, of course, combined were there for about half a century.
Yeah.
But the other half a century was pretty freaking grim for a club that size.
Yeah.
Is there anything to take away from that other than the fact that maybe you should put football first and get a great manager? And that should have been, rather than believing your own hype about the biggest big this, the biggest that. Because some clubs have won steadily through the years almost by inertia. Others have not. United are one of those clubs that really have not.
Yeah, I mean, I think other than maybe Real Madrid and perhaps Bayern Munich, clubs that absolutely dominate, that the clubs that are successful over the period of time have done it with a big personality at the helm, whether it's a manager or an owner. So, you know, you look at United with Ferguson, Busby, Liverpool with Shankly, Chelsea with Abramovich, you know, Milan with Berlusconi as the owner. I think in the absence of a strong personality, clubs do struggle. I think that I don't think you can say that United haven't been successful outside the Busby and Fergie years, because, like you say, it's half a century of the history. That's almost half of the history. So,
Mark. Those 50 years, right? United were dominant, one of the greatest clubs ever. The other 50 years, they were barely Aston Villa in terms of actual success, especially and relative to their fan size. Sorry?
You basically go back before the Second World War, because the last 70 years have been pretty much Ferguson and Busby, with, you know, a couple of other managers in between who won FA Cup. So,
well, no, you're talking about 10 years between Busby and Ferguson, if not more, actually. I know Busby came back. And then you're talking about the last 7 years or 8 years post-Fergie. That's the reality of the club. I guess what I'm saying is, success isn't something you're automatically entitled to. It's something you have to earn. And
absolutely,
I'm kind of surprised they don't look at, or I wonder if maybe it shouldn't be a theme that say, like, oh, like, what made us great before? Rather than crapping on about the United DNA and all this nonsense, what did it before is we had two guys that were super, super bright, and they were given time, of course, well, Busby less so, but, and they achieved incredible things, and they revolutionized the game in their own way.
You can't find some Sir Alex Ferguson's every day either.
But that gets to the problem with that is that, and that is a kind of a question right at the heart of Man United. Do the Glazers and Ed Woodward want a personality at the club who's bigger than them? Does Ed Woodward want a bigger personality than him? Do you know what I mean? That is from nobody since Ed Woodward has taken charge of the club has been allowed to become a bigger personality. Even Mourinho was kind of kept in a box a little bit. It was, they don't want a Fergie figure for whatever reason. They don't want somebody to control the club from top to bottom. As soon as Fergie left, it's telling us within an hour of Ferguson being, you know, announced that he was leaving, they opened a Twitter account. They were so frightened of Ferguson, they wouldn't even have a Twitter account. But since he's left, the Glazers and Woodward have taken over. They don't want somebody else to come in, a Klopp, a Guardiola, a Ferguson. Somebody will dominate the club from top to bottom. And that's what they need. They need a football man to dominate from top to bottom. Until that happens, until the money men are in control of everything, nothing will change.
All right. Augie votes for dominant football men. That's the kind of thing that he obviously enjoys. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Xavi makes his debut on the Barcelona bench against Espanyol. Jules, he got 3 points, but with a good dose of good fortune.
Yeah, he started well, I thought. They had intensity. He played Elias as a right winger. He wanted his wingers really wide. That kind of
Elias making his debut. And the other dude, El Zazul, Fazul, whatever,
yeah,
who came
Abde,
on.
Also, yeah, he played before a little bit with the Dutch guy. And then I thought the first half was decent. Good in the way they moved the ball. They had a few chances. They were just not clinical enough. And after that, it all dropped. I think, I don't know if the intensity, physicality, the time, you know, feeling the pressure maybe. Espanyol played well. Rodri Thomas hit the woodwork twice in the last 5 minutes or something. They got a very lucky penalty.
Very soft pen. Yeah, very soft pen. And the chance, the header that is it the guy who came off the bench, the striker, Demita, is it?
Yeah, Demita.
That was lucky.
Yeah, so easily they could have drawn or even lost that game, but he would take the win and then move on to the huge Benfica game in the Champions League. Epic game, Gab, between Inter and Napoli at San Siro. Here, the shirt is just for you, Javier. Inter put out a 3-2 win and survive last-minute scare or the last 5 minutes or so. It's now a 3-0 race, right, in Serie A?
Yeah, this was, I think it is, I mean, the gap is still 4 points, but I think this is a real statement of intent from Inter. I thought they played really well for long stretches, although this being Inter, they still nearly threw it away. they went a goal down, no problem. They plugged away, they created chances, Koulibaly giving up a penalty, and then at 3-1, he sends on Elif Elmas, Spalletti sends on Elif Elmas and Dries Mertens, and then this being Inter, they flip out because Mertens scores a great goal, and then Mertens really had a tremendous opportunity to make
the 3-3
at the end.
The header from Mario Rui,
which is the Handanovic save, which, great save, also lucky that it didn't go in the end, though. So, look, I think this is the reality of Inter. It's herky-jerky, it's Spazza Inter, it's what they've actually been for most of their history, but the character is there, and I think that bodes really, really well for them. Sticking with Napoli, it's their first defeat of the season, and Victor Osimhen suffers a nasty injury, a dislocated fracture of his cheekbone and eye socket. George is going to be out for a month. Big impact on Napoli. Also, probably Nigeria as well, because he's not going to be match fit when he comes back.
Certainly for the
Cup of Nations.
Yeah, exactly. With Nigeria, if you count a month, end of November to end to December, and then pretty much we'll have to go straight to get ready for the tournament. So, huge miss. Although Mertens can play as a fourth line, we've seen, but doesn't have the same impact, and the way that Spalletti plays with his team, not the same at all. Even if he scored a great goal on
Sunday
night.
And they have the tank, Petagna as well.
But again, not same level at all. So they will have to be really good to cope with that Osimhen. 24 hours earlier than this crazy Inter-Napoli game. Milan also lost for the first time in Serie A this season, losing 4-3 at Fiorentina, Gab. It was a wild match also between Ibrahimovic and Vlahovic.
Yeah, this is pretty nuts because obviously Vlahovic, you know, supposedly the next big thing, not named Erling Haaland. Clearly Ibrahimovic is his hero. You know, most people's last name ends in each half. Zlatan is their hero. Milan went a goal down. Bad mistake from Tatarusano.
Really?
But then Fiorentina capitalized, pushed on. You know, at one point, went to 3 goals. And then Milan plugged away. Ibrahimovic getting in there, scoring twice. In the end, Vlahovic, 2 goals, two really good goals, which in some ways are reminiscent of young Ibra, the way the running, the finishing, the strength, the intelligence. Mitigated by the fact that Napoli lost the following day. I think they're still very much in this.
Yeah.
Now, after a run of 10 games undefeated, Arsenal collapsed at Anfield as Liverpool win 4-0.
Yeah.
Sure, so we get a little bit overly excited by the Gunners and the Arteta recipe and the 4-4-2, or were Liverpool simply that good?
I don't think we were too excited or overly excited. I just think this is the gap between them two. I don't think Arsenal...
Four goals.
But it's four because you make silly mistakes. You show your lack of experience and your lack of maturity, I think, in that second half. It's a team that is still learning, it very much being rebuilt too. So even Arteta is learning, and you will see the next question. But I'm pretty sure he won't do that again. So I think it's part of the process. It's hard to take, The first half hour was pretty decent, I thought. Even Saka had, by then, the best chance in the game. Then Ramsdale made some great save, and Liverpool are too good for Arsenal. They can't compete right now, but this should not be like a huge stop to what they've been doing before. That's all.
I don't know. I look at this, and I think to me the story is more about Liverpool being really, really good.
They were good. They
because
were really good, but
let's not
a gap
forget.
Between them.
No, I know, but it's not taken for granted, right? They're coming back after an international break. They've had people going off to Africa, going off all over the world and stuff, and they come back, and they go through the first half hour, which is so, and then they just unleash a can of whoop-ass.
I mean, when Thiago is in that kind of form and fit, it's just...
Well, Thiago's nicely rested, let's not forget.
So, Gab, I was mentioning it, but it was a quiet game until Sadio Mane's challenge on Tomiyasu, and then Arteta loses it and argues with Klopp and everything. But I was at the game, and trust me, the crowd, especially the cop that was half asleep before that, got fired up. And again, I think Arteta needs to learn from it, doesn't he?
I was watching this game on television, so I just had people telling me, oh, look, this has sparked the game into life.
It did massively.
Well, that's the case. And I said then it was a mistake by Arteta to go and fire them up. I thought it was kind of funny, not just because Klopp is like three times as big as Arteta. I'm sure Klopp is not a violent man, whereas I could see Arteta potentially going a bit psycho. Maybe it's the hair. It was kind of funny, though. After he walks to him, like, it's the whole, like, hold me back, hold me back. But I thought they were grown up about it afterwards. I mean, Klopp said the obvious, right? There was nothing in it. I don't know what Arteta was quite, if he didn't see it properly or whatever. Mm. But, you know, Arteta said, sticking up for my guy, he's sticking up for his guy. Let's move on.
Yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We get to see the M&M and everything looks great for Paris Saint-Germain against Nantes until Keylor Navas's boneheaded red card nearly ruins it all. Good thing that Messi guy is around to help Pochettino.
It's good, but you know what? That first half was really good. Excellent from the front three, especially. Messi played a bit
the
closer.
The finishing not so much.
No, but okay, they missed chances, but they could easily have been 4-0. Lafont was really good in goal for Nantes. They could have been 4-0 up at halftime. Messi playing closer to Neymar and Mbappe. Mbappe scoring again, by the way. It was really good then. They took the eye of the ball a bit. Navas gets sent off for a crazy challenge outside of this box. And then he all got a bit crazy.
Not just that, we should also remind people, no Gigi Donnarumma on the bench.
No,
so we got Sergio Rico Suave.
Rico
come
was
on.
There, we made a good save. And then Messi doing a Messi special to score his first goal in Ligue 1 on his 21st shot on target. Or 21st shot.
Far too many. He also helped the own goal, which made them 2-1.
Yes, exactly.
That Messi goal, it was funny because I'm like, I've seen this so many times.
But if you're the non-defender,
he cuts it to right to left. Like, you know what's going to happen and you can't stop
crazy.
It.
Real Madrid power ahead at the top of La Liga table as they win 4-1 away at Granada. Gab, this was arguably the best performance of the season, would you say? Despite the opposition, because they're fighting.
I thought it was really, really good.
It was
day one, first minute, the midfield had control of the game.
So
They moved the ball very well. I really liked what Marco Asensio did as well. He scored, he's got so much quality, and I think this is his position going forward.
Yeah.
You can wait for Eden Hazard. You can even wait for Godot or Gareth Bale as he's known. But it's a big win for them. Manchester City turned on the style against Everton with a 3-0 victory. Jules, we got to see Cole Palmer make his first league start, but I know you're just going to want to talk about Cancelo's
thank pass you. I'm even amazed you didn't put it right in the question. That outside of the right foot assist is just sick. It's just crazy. The way he shapes his body, how precise it is, perfect. I was like, wow. I played it again and again and again to my kids to say, look, this is what you should be able to do soon.
Yeah, and then your kids' coaches are going to be like, why do they keep hitting the ball with the outside of their boot like this? What have you done to them?
But well done, Cole Palmer. Very good first start in a forced number nine position, most of it. And I think it tells you how intelligent and talented the kid is if he can just go in against a team like Everton. Okay, they haven't been playing well lately or having results, but to go in and put a performance like this in a position that is new to him is quite incredible.
Can't be that new if he's been at City, but yeah.
Yeah, but still, you know what I mean? Like, great future ahead of him, clearly. Chelsea beat up Leicester away 3-0. Gab, they look sharper than they've done for a long time.
I've been complaining all along, they're getting wins, but they're not playing well. No, they played really, really well. Right. I know Leicester are in a bad spot. I think it's no wins in six across all competitions, whatever, and they've got guys missing. But the way they took control, the way how fluid they were, Jorginho coming back after what he's been through,
I know,
psychologically, I thought this is a big call playing him straight away, and yet he put, you know, he pulled all the strings. This looks really good. What I find interesting is the way Ziyech and Hudson-Odoi are responding in these situations. These guys, they want to keep their starting place. Ziyech came off the bench. But these guys want to continue playing big roles.
No, definitely.
Ugly scenes between Olympique Lyonnais and Marseille as a bottle hits Dimitri Payet after 4 minutes. He's taking corner kick. The match is eventually abandoned, Jules.
This is crazy, Gary. It's another mess. This is not the first time this season, unfortunately, for Ligue 1. This is the best Ligue 1 season we've had in maybe ever. And yet we keep having those issues on the field, but off the field with ultras and fans. And this was even more chaotic because at some point we were told the game is going to restart. The Lyon players came out, but it was very clear that the Marseille players didn't want to restart because they didn't feel safe. Payet could not play again. So then the game was abandoned. After that, it's a mess between Lyon and the sort of the local authorities there and the French league. This is very simple to me, Gab. The game should have been stopped and abandoned straight away. The game should be lost by Lyon for not controlling their own fans. And this is it. I don't want to hear anything more, any more debates on what should we do. Should we restart? Should we resume? What about Payet? How does it feel? This is the way it should do. And I can guarantee you that the next time, no Lyon fans will throw anything on the pitch after their team lose 3-0 after 4 minutes against Marseille.
This is the whole idea. If they also close that sector as well,
exactly.
When you allow them back, you can be sure that some of those big, tough ultras will be the ones patrolling the area,
exactly.
Making sure that nobody does this.
Exactly.
Lyon are in seventh place. With his defeat, you know, in the end of the season can mean the difference between playing
completely
in Europe or not. So
crazy.
I would assume they care.
Antonio Conte wins his first Premier League game as Tottenham Hotspur manager. They come from behind to be at least 2-1. Gab, as the cliche goes, it was a game of two halves. They were really bad though in the first half.
He's pretty horrendous. I mean, Leeds had a million players out. They had these dudes like on there who, you know, Gelhart up front and whatever. And yet they really took the game to them. You saw, I wasn't expecting movement, the movement Conte wants, because he didn't have time to work, but I was expecting a lot more than what we saw.
Me too.
After the break, you know, we can make the joke, halftime speech, you started shouting. I'm sure there was more to it than that. They got back into it. A bit fortunate,
they
I think,
lucky
with
bit,
the
yeah.
actual, you know, the with Dyer's free kick. I'm surprised that Dyer's the free kick taker.
It's not the first, yeah. He's been regular, but why?
Interesting. But whatever, it worked out. And Sergio Reguilón, I love this post-match interview. So, so happy.
Yeah.
With Bayern losing on Friday night, Borussia Dortmund moved within a single point thanks to a win over Stuttgart. Marco Reus gets the winner, and even your boy Daniel Malen finally does something. Jules, all this without Erling Haaland.
Yeah, a point behind, as you said. And then on December the 4th, Borussia
it's
Dortmund.
It's the big one, yes,
big one.
The classicer.
Watching the game, when Malen scores, I went, yeah, have that, Gab Marcotti, have that. Daniel Malen is amazing.
Look, if you're going to stink, it's better to stink and win, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Let's show some love for Jose Mourinho because Roma were away to Andrei Shevchenko's Genoa. It was 0-0. They were playing poorly. It was not a very good game. Under the rain as well. And then he made a massive call, brought on 18-year-old Felix Afenagian instead of Nicolo Zaniolo. And what happened, Gab?
And the youngster scores two goals. Only his third appearance.
Second
the other one's off the bench. His second one
was
a jewel. That's right. Like, this is vintage Mourinho. He made a really, really big call. And he made a big call because I got into this with a bunch of, you know, there's this weird community of Mourinho fans. And I said, look, you know, he left out Zaniolo's. Zaniolo is Roma's most talented player. I don't think there's any debate about that, right? He chose not to bring him on. Now, Zaniolo's not been playing well this season.
Nope.
And I think, you know, rightly he was benched when Mourinho changed the system to go with the two strikers. But still, in Rome, with a team not doing great, after the loss to Venezia, at 0-0 in the driving rain, a normal manager would have said, I'm going to play it safe. I'll just send on Zaniolo, whatever. We draw 0-0. He said we tried or whatever. Instead, no. Mourinho's got the courage to go and send on this
his third appearance.
Mourinho then told the story afterwards about how he had promised him an 800 euro pair of shoes, which presumably now, since he scored two goals, he'll get both the left one as well as the right one.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad are held to a scoreless draw by Valencia and are now a point behind Real Madrid. Jules, I hope I'm wrong, but I have to ask, is the magic running out?
I'm with you a bit. Watching that was was quite painful, I have to say.
It was painful because the Bordalas team in Valencia sucking the life out of
you. You can only beat what's in front of you. So you knew that the way Valencia were going to play if you were Imanol and Real Sociedad, and there was not enough in their performance to beat that defense, and that was it. And I was disappointed. I'm hoping, like you said, that this is just because it was Bordalas and Valencia, and then the next game is a bit more open and they find their magic again. And Januzaj, at times you could see look bright, but it was just not enough on the day. Juventus win away to Lazio 2-0 thanks to two Leo Bonucci penalties. Gab, I've got two questions for you. One, does Mauricio Sarri have the right to be very angry? And why doesn't Bonucci take penalties for Italy then? You'll be already in the World Cup.
So on the Sarri point, it's pretty obvious he's angry because that first penalty, Morata, yeah, was just a dive right to Morata. And
it was a bad pen.
That was a big screw up, and he's got a right to be angry about
and
that.
And the fans get him a... The Juve
fan. He's not very popular with Juve fan Mauricio Sarri for many reasons. Despite obviously delivering a title, let's not forget.
Yeah, let's not forget.
The second penalty was Reyna just kind of, pulling a Keylor Navas, you might say.
Yeah.
Bonucci has to take the penalties for Italy because Jorginho's the penalty taker, and he's been a better penalty taker over time, even though he screwed those two one. That's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But what was interesting, I thought, was it's a big win for Juve. They keep the ball moving. I thought they played better defensively. I just don't know that you can play this type of counter game against most opponents. Because a lot of opponents, you're going to have to impose yourself, move the ball effectively, and I don't think they're quite there
yet. Yeah, that was a really
good block. Steven Gerrard makes his debut as Aston Villa manager, and they beat Brighton 2-0. Jules, what did you see that's different?
Certainly more solidity defensively. Went back to a back four. The 4-3-3 formation, not that it worked great, because they had no chances whatsoever for most of the game until the end, and the Ollie Watkins, who started on the left-hand side, scored. But again, he will take that. He had not much time to work on what he wanted to do with his team. So we wait a bit more, I think, to see them having more of the ball, especially not against Brighton, because you knew that Brighton would have a lot of the ball, even away from home. So you take the win, and I think you move on pretty quickly. Atletico Madrid find a way to beat Osasuna with a late goal from Felipe on a corner. Gab, this was ugly, but an important win.
Yes, I was thinking about this, because obviously they were looking ahead to the Champions League. It's pretty obvious. Like Luis Suarez on the bench, the ball was on the bench post-break. And Osasuna defend really well. Look, Osasuna,
we said
them
before.
Show. They're like, what, like 7th or 8th on the table?
Yeah, we said how good they are.
Yeah, they put five guys at the back. So it's always going to be about grinding it out. He went with a lightweight attack of Griezmann and Correa.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work. I thought Lemar contributed very little. He's supposed to move in between. In the end, set piece, old school, 87th minute, bish bash squash, 3 points, you get it done.
Yeah.
Huge win.
Yeah.
Some late magic from Ivan Rakitic helped Sevilla snatch a point at home against Alaves. Jules, are they going to be happier for the point gained or sadder for the points lost, since they could have been level with Real Madrid at the top?
I think they'd be happier with the point that they got, Gab, because it was not good. We said about Real Sociedad, I thought Sevilla were not good. They took a long time to get going in that game. And Alaves are not very good either, to be fair, and yet they caused them a lot of problems. So take that point. Huge game for them in the Champions League in midweek after the defeat against Lille in game week 4. So I guess maybe in the back of their head they also had that game in mind, and that's why they were not at their best.
Great finish from Rakitic, by the way.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen this, check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Mario Pasalic backs 2 goals and Atalanta cruise to a 5-2 win over Spezia. Gab, Gasperini, good times, are back again.
Yeah, 3-0 open. Right, look, Spezia
took
played
the lead
open
as well. Spezia took the lead. They were like, whoa.
It was two teams that attack each other. So, you knew that in the end, Atalanta, when that happens, the more talented team usually wins.
Usually.
And Atalanta got it. I think it's a big morale booster for them. And look, they're right up there as well, near the top of the table. Leipzig fall away to Hoffenheim 2-0. Jules, I guess we were wrong for thinking the win over Borussia Dortmund before the break suggested they'd turn the corner.
Jesse Marsch, very critical of his own players and the attitude. I mean, I don't know if they expected to win this game easily, but certainly Hoffenheim wanted it more than them. They were more aggressive. They were more into the game completely. It was really hard to watch a Leipzig team so poor, with the ball. But not just the attitude, because I thought, okay, the attitude is one thing, but you've got better players than Hoffenheim. You should still do better. And they didn't. And I just think this could be a turning point, but for the wrong reason, in a nasty way, for Marsch, who already walking on thin ice, because despite the win against Dortmund, they were so up and down so far this season that they also have a huge game coming up in for third place, really, in the Champions League in midweek. So I don't know, I was very surprised how poor they were.
I don't think we've seen that. I mean, the biggest difference between Nagelsmann and Marsh is that Nagelsmann last season, he could take his foot off the gas. He could let the more technical players make the difference.
Yeah.
Here, it just seems like it's a million miles an hour all the time. And when that intensity's not there and you try to play that way, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, that's true. Dean Smith wins on his debut with Norwich at the defeat Southampton 2-1. Gab, 2 weeks ago, they were dead last on 2 points. 8 points from safety, and now they've won two in a row, and the safety is only 3 points away. It's quite a crazy turnaround.
I think it's remarkable. So I guess the secret is, right, is to decide you're going to fire your manager.
Yeah.
Let him go and manage.
Yeah.
Then let him come out afterwards to the media, talk about like, yeah, well, I'm so proud.
Right,
we're building something, whatever. And then, yeah, you do build something, but not without him. No, joking aside, Dean Smith is a very, very, very good manager, I think.
Yeah.
I know the reasons about why he left or whatever, but he gave Norwich an instant lift, brought back Billy Gilmore, and they look better. I still imagine, logically, they should go down because they've got less resources, I think, than anybody in the division, yeah, with the possible exception of Burnley. But this would be quite an escape.
That would be something.
Eddie Howe was supposed to make his debut for Newcastle. Now he's still got to wait because they went out and tested positive for COVID. Still, they got a point against Brentford, which is not to be sniffed at. 3-3 pyrotechnics.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Saint-Maximin running rampant.
Yeah, good. Okay, but conceded 3 goals, and already before our
worry. It's hard not to concede 3 goals against Brentford. They create a billion chances.
No, I know. Okay, but still, the worry was that even when it was at Bournemouth, Eddie Howe's team were leaky. Now Newcastle were leaky before arriving. We said, okay, let's see if he can stop the rot defensively. They conceded 3 goals in his first game, even if he's not there. Okay, you would take a point. You still haven't won. You're the only team in the whole, you know, of the country not to have won a single game this season. There's not many, I think, Grotefurt and maybe Levante, and that's it, in the whole of the five big leagues. So I'm not sure how positive that is, but at least I guess you didn't lose.
Yeah, it's a start.
Sport are reporting that Samuel Umtiti has not agreed a pay cut, and as a result, Barcelona are close to cancelling his contract, which expires in 2023. Gab, I get a sense of deja vu here.
The story still goes on and on and on. And this poor Umtiti.
Crazy few years he's had.
The decline's been shocking, the injuries, you feel bad for him. I don't know what else is going on. But, okay, first of all, let me explain something to you. The man has a contract, right? So you say, hey, Umtiti, take a pay cut. And he says, no. Then I'll cancel your contract. Then he says, oh, yeah, meet my lawyer here. And then, yeah, you want to cancel my contract? Fine. Then you can pay me until June 2023, the money that you owe me.
Yeah.
So I don't see what the purpose of all this is, right? If you're saying, like, oh, look, between now and June 2023, we owe you $20 million. Here's $15 million. Go away. That's one thing. But having him cut his salary, what, in exchange rate? I don't understand why he would possibly do it. If he's not in Xavi's plans, he's not in Xavi's the one who should be having this conversation, first and foremost. If he says, hey, guys, I need Umtiti as an extra body back there, but I don't want to pay him what he earns, then go talk to him and sort it out. If not, then just let it be. Not in stupid stories, cancel your contract, whatever. Yeah. Bild are reporting that Bayern Munich have decided not to pay unvaccinated players who test positive for COVID or have to enter mandatory quarantine. Jules, are you okay with that?
Completely. Completely okay with that. You penalize your club. If you don't get the vaccine and then you test positive, you penalize your club. Your club is without you for 2 weeks, maybe even more than that, when you have to get vaccinated. This is what the club is asking you to do. You don't want to do what the club say? No problem. They don't pay you if you test positive and have to self-isolate.
So I disagree with that. To me, this seems a little bit like you're playing to the crowd, because I disagree with this.
Why?
Well, first of all, under labor law, if I get sick, I still expect my employer to pay me, right?
Okay.
Secondly, obviously, being vaccinated doesn't mean that you can't get sick, or most importantly, doesn't mean that you can't be in mandatory quarantine.
It's
right?
No problem. If you got the vaccine and still get sick, they still pay you. You can't play. You have to self-isolate, but they pay you.
Right, but until there's a I'm just surprised the law allows this. And one other thing too is, considering you're out for 10 days, I mean, look, let's call space to space.
It's like Joshua
Kimmich, right? If I'm Joshua Kimmich,
£15.
You know, relative, it would be
I know.
It would be like the company docking me,
it's for the principle.
Yeah.
It's for the principle. Florentino Perez is singing the Super League blues again. Gab, he told Real Madrid members that it's necessary to limit the irresponsible spending of big clubs like Manchester City and PSG.
Yeah, maybe limit the irresponsible spending of the other club that's still in the Super League, your friends at Barcelona, who nearly became insolvent as a result. All right, look, this is obfuscation and everything else. If you want to argue that you need tougher controls and the financial fair play wasn't as applied as tough as it could be, this is my issue all along, right? Then, yeah, I'll agree with you. Let's have rules. Let's enforce them. And maybe they weren't tough enough on City and Paris Saint-Germain in the way you would have liked. Equally, and this is what everybody seems to continually ignore, is under the financial fair play rules, flawed as they were, any affected party, which means any other club, like Real Madrid, could have challenged any settlement agreement. Nobody challenged it. Yeah. Why? Because ultimately it's in their interest to have City and Paris Saint-Germain injecting cash into the system so that they can buy their crappy players off them, the ones they no longer want. No, it's as simple as that, right? And this is the big inconsistency there. Anyway, that brings us to an end. But Thursday, we got midweek Champions League.
Champions League, huge one, baby.
Match day five, we got to be back for that.
Yes.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.